Hey, you already know what's up. What's that, another home run? But you know the job ain't done till we hold that trophy up. Hey. What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 581 of the Talking Friars podcast and YouTube show. Ben Fadden with you here. It is April 3rd, 2024. Padres, they lose this series to the St. Louis Cardinals, but they avoid getting swept today. So we at least have that. So I'll be talking about that series, the Juan Soto article that came out today, and Ken Rosenthal and Dennis Lynn put out a piece in The Athletic earlier today talking about the Padres and their interest in Luis Arraez. Jesus Luzardo was also mentioned in this article as well. That seemed more like a pre-Dylan Cease move thing, but we'll get to that. Obviously, we'll get to the comments. So if you're live here on YouTube, I very much appreciate that. Leave your comments, your questions in the chat. If you want to support the channel, you can use that super chat button. If you want to join the show, I always give fans the opportunity to do that. And talk some Padres, you can click the link that is pinned up at the top of the chat. Let's start off with today's game, and we can work our way back today. It was great. You know, I know it's not a must-win game when it's the ninth game of the year, but it felt like a must-win game. It was a must-win game for the fan base so that we didn't, like, lose our minds over the off day and tonight, right? I mean, imagine if they would have got swept by the Cardinals and their record would have been, 3-6? It would have been 3-6 heading into an off day and going into San Francisco. Like that would not have been fun. Still not ideal having a 4-5 record. I think this homestand overall was disappointing. There were some encouraging signs. You know, Jackson Merrill is one of them. Jake Cronenworth is one of them. Yu Darvish bouncing back was one of them. Joe Musgrove bouncing back was another one. There were encouraging signs, but just overall, when you have a losing homestand, you go 4-5, because that's not how long the homestand was. But they were 1-1, and they end up losing 2 out of 3 to the San Francisco Giants. And then they end up splitting the series before with, they lost 2 out of 3 to the Cardinals. I'm mixing up these teams here. Split the 4-game series against the Giants. That's disappointing. I think a lot of Padres fans are disappointed with what happened in this homestand. If you're not, let me know why you're not disappointed. I think our standards need to be high for this team. I know that the level of expectation is not as high, at least on paper, because of the talent, right? It's not as high as last year. The anticipation around baseball for this Padres team, that anticipation is on the Dodgers. That anticipation is not on the Padres nationally. But as Padres fans, we still need to have that high standard for this team. We can't say, oh, these games don't matter. Well, no, they do matter. This game today counts just as much as the game on September 21st. You know, it's the same. May seem more elevated then if the Padres are fighting for that last wild card spot. They're trying to get into the postseason. But you got to have urgency from day one, regardless of if it's game one, if it's game four, if it's a day game like this. They all count the same. So today, Padres get the win, which was good. They win 3-2. They had opportunities to win by more than one run. But there were some really big double plays. I tweeted this out moments ago. Some big double plays in this game right off the bat in the first inning. Getting that done, I think it was a hit batter, and then gets the double play. If that didn't happen, I mean, you could have been playing from behind right there. And this Padres team, it doesn't seem like they play the best when they're playing from behind right out of the gate like that. I mean, we saw it, game one of this Cardinals series where they were behind with Matt Waldron on the mound. Didn't work out that great. But Joe, I thought, was much better today. On my underdog fantasy pick, I had him going at least 6 innings. He went 6 innings. 1 earned run, only walked 1 guy, struck out 7. So for anyone that was super worried about Joe Musgrove, I was saying, like, I'm not there. I believe Joe's going to turn it around. And I get it. I'm biased because I'm a big Joe Musgrove fan. He's my favorite pitcher on this team. He's a hometown guy. I mean, his thing's right behind me. Like, I understand. But I think even if you're unbiased, realizing how talented Joe Musgrove is and how much he wants to win, I think you were kind of nuts if you were going to overreact and be super worried about Joe Musgrove after a spring training and then a not so great outing in Korea, not that great outing against the Giants. I don't want to say it's early, but for like a pitcher's season, I just point back to in 2023, sure, it was different circumstances. Joe underwent, or not underwent, he had that injury and he had to make his way back from that, got off to a slow start. Remember, there was the foot thing, right, with the turf in Mexico City. Had to work his way back from that and kind of compensate for that as well. And so it took him some time, but then he had that Yankee Stadium start. And then ever since then, he like dominated before, obviously, he ended up missing the rest of the season with that shoulder injury. But I'm a big believer in Joe Musgrove. I am not surprised that he was able to bounce back today. And can we give a shout out to Tom Cosgrove for him bouncing back? His ERA is 14.54, but his last two appearances have been good. Two punch outs today. Wandy Peralta was the Yuki Matsui of today. Matsui struggled yesterday. I think it was yesterday. Peralta hits two guys. And that made Robert Suarez go into this game, who he hadn't pitched in a while, so it made sense for him to go five outs. Inning in two thirds, one hit, no earned runs, walk two, which, like, he did not pitch amazing. You know, with those two walks, it makes you worry a little bit. But he got a huge double play, got the strikeout to end the game. And what I thought was hilarious was post-game. Joe Musgrove, who we know is one of the leaders of this team, and he wants to win as much as anyone, more than probably anyone, on that Padres team, specifically for the city of San Diego. And he was talking to the media, and credit to Marty Caswell for pulling up or getting this quote. Joe said this about Robert Suarez going five outs. Having a closer that you can go out and rely on for more than just three outs is huge for us. I wonder who that was pointed to. I wonder why he decided to say that. Joe, for you saying that right there, you made a lot of Padres fans laugh right there. Or maybe you made some Padres fans think about the hell of last year. Such a disappointing year, and I had to think back to Josh Hader only going one inning and not wanting to pitch back-to-back-to-back days all that much. And almost like putting it back on the coaching staff, saying that the phone goes both ways with the whole San Francisco Giants series at the end of the season. His quotes, are we in a playoff race? Yeah. You think Joe is pissed off? Yeah. He probably just didn't want to say it publicly because of everything that was happening. But that was obviously directed at Josh Hader. So I hope Josh saw that. And sure, he has a bunch of money with the Houston Astros. And I hope that he's happy there. But yeah, I think that confirms how the clubhouse felt about Josh Hader last year. And so hopefully that's going to be a good thing. We want Josh Hader's talent on the Padres, but we want Josh Hader's talent in Robert Suarez's mindset. Combine those two things, and you've got the best reliever in baseball. You've got the best team player reliever in baseball, if that makes sense. I understand kind of where Josh was coming from with the, you know, he wants the big payday and saving his arm and all that, but it's just not, he said things that you don't say. I think he could have made himself more available last year, and I love that Joe just came out and said that. And Robert Suarez being able to do this, sure, he was off for days, and so it did line up well for him to go five outs like this, but when you have a closer that's willing to do that, it's huge. Not only for those outs, you get your best reliever, you know, facing guys that maybe the other team wasn't expecting him to face because they thought maybe he'd only pitch the ninth inning. So you get that, but it's also an effect on the rest of the bullpen because the rest of the bullpen sees Robert Suarez is going five outs. I have no excuse. to not try to do everything I can to help this team win, regardless of what situation it is as well. So I give big props to Robert Suarez, but we already knew, like, this is who this guy is. He was doing it last year. He was pitching more than three outs last year while Josh Hader, Princess Hader, was, you know, or King Hader, however you want to say it, was sitting there in the bullpen going, nope, three outs, closing situation, save situation. Like, set the good example. And Robert Suarez did that today. He was doing that last year as well. And so props to Robert Suarez for that. But yeah, funny, funny quote from Joe Musgrove for sure. And then today overall, I mean, offensively, Kyle Higashioka threw out a couple runners, hit that home run. I'm not going to be like, oh, Higgy, okay, look at the power. I mean, it was 90 miles per hour down the middle of the plate. This starter, by the way, Zach Thompson, I think was his name. He's only starting because Sonny Gray is hurt. So you could very well, like, spin this win for the Padres negatively. I'm sure JD's third, if he's, I haven't checked the chat, but if he's in here, he's probably spinning it negatively. I am concerned a little bit about the offense. I mean, they haven't went out and gotten someone like Tommy Pham or Brandon Belt. I get it, Profar. He's actually doing pretty well, but Manny Machado's start to the year, not that great. First inning today, have a chance to really, like, give Joe a great lead. And they end up getting one run out of it. I think it was bases loaded situation. They get one run out of it, and it was a walk. It was Profar walking. Eggie punches out, I believe, with the bases loaded to end the inning. It was good. They were putting pressure. Bogart, I think, started off with a single, I want to say. And then he stole, it was either him or Tatis that stole second base. And it was like, all right, putting pressure on the Cardinals. Love it. And you got your 3, 4, 5 hitters up at the plate. Let me find this first inning because I want to get the details right. Yeah, Bogart singled. Bogart stole second. Tatis walked. So right there, you got first and second. You're putting pressure on the Cardinals. You got Zach Thompson on the mound. And you got 3, 4, 5 coming up. Cronenworth pops out. Manny flies out. Kim walks. Profar walks. That's the only reason why they scored that run. And then Eggie strikes out. And I get it. Eggie's not starting every day. That's not like the real starting third baseman for the Padres. But these guys need to come through in those spots. If you want to make it easier on your teammates, on the pitching staff, on Joe Musgrove, get that opportunity and take advantage of that opportunity. And we're not seeing that. We didn't see that enough in this Padres-Cardinals series. And so, yeah. I mean, Bogart, 645 OPS to start. Maybe some are laughing at me because I'm reading OPSs when we're 9 games into the season. But I'm trying to be urgent here because I admit, and plenty of other fans were not as urgent as we needed to be last year with this team. We were like, this. We were just agreeing to the message that the Padres players were sending. Yeah, everything's going to be okay. It'll be fine. It's early. They'll turn it around. Don't jump back on the bandwagon when we start effing raking, like Manny said, right? And that was in April, I believe, of last year. I believe Manny also said later in the year that there was no panicking in the clubhouse. Well, okay. Then I think later he said, oh, no, we need more urgency. So just mixed messages, right? So we need to be on this team. I think as a fan base, we need to be on this team from the get-go. Cronenworth, I'm surprised that his OPS is 762 with the start that he's had this year. I've been very impressed. Not super surprised, though, but impressed. I thought a bounce back was definitely coming. Manny's 729 OPS. I thought that that would be lower. Kim, Manny, Bogarts, they've been disappointing for me to start this year. Higashioka, 625 OPS, whatever. We know Higashioka, like, he's there for defense. The veteran backup catcher, whatever. But we got to get better production from Ha-Sung Kim, from Manny Machado, from Xander Bogarts. I mean, Cronenworth, you want the OPS to be better, but I'm not going to sit here and whine about Jake Cronenworth. He's been one of the best Padres this season. And if you disagree with that, I think you're nuts. Maybe you're not watching the games and you're just looking at stats. but he's been super valuable to this Padres team so far early in this season. So just summing back up this game today, they should have won by more runs. They should have cashed in on opportunities that they did not cash in on. So there is some concern there still with the offense. There's that deja vu of 2023. I mean, they went 0-for-11 with runners in scoring position. Now, you could sit there and say, well, Ben, the Cardinals went 0-for last night with runners in scoring position, I think, right? 0-for-6, and they won that game. Yeah, well, they used power. You know, Wilson Contreras hit a home run yesterday. And the Padres went 2-for-7, but it wasn't enough because, like, the big situations. Now, Cronenworth, this was just luck. I mean, he hit it right at the Cardinal shortstop, I believe, last night. So, I mean, can't really do a ton about that. But Bogaerts was left in scoring position a couple of times. Kim was left in scoring position last night. Eight left on base. And, you know, the power was not, like, the Padres did not come up with a big home run in last night's game. The Cardinals were able to do that. And Wilson Contreras loves hitting against the Padres. I'll tell you that. I am so happy that we are done facing the Cardinals as of now, for now, before we go to, you know, St. Louis later in the year. Because he was mashing this series. But yeah, Bogaerts 0-for-4, Manny 0-for-4, Kim 0-for-4. Those are three of your star players. And Kim is not a superstar. He's not in like that category of Manny, Tatis. Bogaerts is probably on the same level as Kim right now, to be honest, and Cronenworth. But in terms of the contract, right, Bogaerts is on that superstar level. But Kim is one of the stars of this team. He's in the top five of this order. And I'm fine, by the way. There's some discussion with the lineup. I'm fine with the lineup being the same, pretty much. The top five guys. I mean, yeah, top six if you're going to have Profar, seven if Profar Campusano. If Profar six, Campusano is seven. Okay. These guys just have to hit. Like, we know these guys are the starting players. We get it. Changing the lineup, I don't know what that's going to do, really. It's game 9, game 10 coming up on Friday against San Francisco. Let's just stick with this lineup the way it is. You know, at least the guys that are there every day. I like Merrill hitting ninth when he's in there. I didn't like that he wasn't playing today, by the way. Just stick with it. But like these guys, Bogaerts, obviously, like I hit on, Manny, Kim, they're going to have to hit better. Cronenworth's going to have to be consistent. Tatis going to have to be consistent. Campusano, I love what I'm seeing from him so far. Like, that's great. I think he's one of the more underrated players in baseball, not just underrated catchers, but underrated players in baseball with the offense that he can provide in like the bottom third of the Padres order, middle third if he's hitting sixth. You know, like I love what he's hitting to the opposite field, not trying to do too much is what it seems like sometimes. So I like it. But I mean, yesterday, yeah, like I said in my post game reaction, just not enough cashing in on opportunities, and you could say not creating enough enough opportunities. I mean, because if you compare it to like the Padres today when they had 11 runners in scoring position, 0-for-11, at least they didn't go 0-for yesterday. But it would be nice to have four more opportunities to get a hit with runners in scoring position last night. And I know it's not realistic to expect that every day, but it's just frustrating. You know, the deja vu of 2023, right? It's just frustrating where when you get a start with Darvish where he goes 7 innings, first time a Padres starter went 7 so far this year, I was going to be happy if he just went 6, but he went 7, very efficient, only one walk, and the Padres can't get a win there. Like those games, the Padres should win those games. We're not the Oakland A's. We're not the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, actually, the Pirates have gotten off to a good start, but they were playing the Marlins. We're not the Marlins, who haven't won a game yet this year. We're not a bad lineup. We got talent in this lineup. You should win those games. I know Matsui wasn't that great, but like Darvish, he supplied you what you should need to be in that game, to go take that lead, to go win that game. And that's one of those that we may look back at the end of the year if the Padres miss the postseason by a couple games or we don't get the home wild card game or whatever. May look back at that and say, well, that's part of the reason why they didn't get what we wanted, right? Michaelis for the Cardinals went 6, 2 earned runs, 4 punch outs. I was hoping they'd do more, but I wasn't super surprised that they didn't do a ton off of Miles Michaelis. What really irritated me more was Kyle Gibson the night before, where he goes 7 innings against the Padres. Kyle Gibson. Lots of ground balls. Like, I'll give him credit for that, but what is his fastball? What is his velo? Like 91 miles per hour? And it was great to see Jackson Merrill's home run, but to let Kyle Gibson go 7 innings, I don't think that should happen all that much. Hopefully that doesn't happen, you know, a lot more this year where there's like a veteran guy that doesn't blow you away and he goes 7 innings and the Padres allow him to be super efficient. 94 pitches from Kyle Gibson in game 2 of this series. And Matt Waldron, he just didn't have it. 4 innings, 4 earned runs. He walked one guy, 7 punch outs, gave up a home run, 9 hits. Failed to adjust. I just didn't understand that watching that on, what was that, Tuesday? Why weren't you adjusting? Why didn't the Padres say, hey, stop throwing the knuckleball in key spots? It's not working enough. Did he get some swings and misses? Yeah, because sometimes the knuckleball worked. But if it's not working, like it's spinning too much, which if Mudd can point it out on the, I'm not saying Mudd's dumb. I'm just saying, if a broadcaster can point it out on the broadcast, you yourself who throw it all the time, you should recognize, okay, this isn't working. Some guys are pounding this pitch. I think it was Arenado and Contreras. Some guys are pounding this pitch. Let's adapt. You know, the broadcast showed a spring training interview where Matt Waldron was talking about how he didn't want to be known just as a knuckleball pitcher. He's more than that. Well, then throw more of your pitches more often than throwing the knuckleball as much as he did the other night. I said this on my post-game reaction. I'm not going to sit here and say Matt Waldron shouldn't get another chance, because then I'm saying that, oh, Dylan Cease, you should be done. Joe Musgrove should have been done before he got this chance today. Darvish should have been done before he got that chance a few nights ago, right? I'm giving him more than one shot. I'm giving him more than 2 shots. But if this is a problem, like every outing, then they're going to have to think about Johnny Brito. They're going to have to think about Jackson Wolfe, who they acquired back from the Pirates for like a spot start. They're going to have to consider Pedro Avila. So that's something to look at. Like, what is Matt Waldron's usage going to look like in this next start? I'm trying to look up, I believe you can look it up on Baseball Savant, right? Just looking up Matt Waldron. This was Tuesday or Monday? I think Tuesday. No, Monday. Yeah, Monday. Monday's outing. I'm just looking up the pitch usage, the percentage from Waldron. Here it is. So he used the knuckleball 45% of the time, 20% sinker, 19% four-seam fastball. And I'm just trying to find the trends here. So the spin on his knuckleball was 75 points lower than his year average, I believe, last year. I think that's what the 318 is. I know this is terrible for the podcast listeners, even the YouTube, because you're not even seeing what I'm looking at. But I'm on Baseball Savant and looking at Matt Waldron's start and looking at the percent that he used that knuckleball, the spin rate. The spin rate was 243 from that start. His average, I believe, last year was 318, so minus 75. Like, when it's not working, you see the spin rate. Well, actually, if the spin rate's down like that, then doesn't that mean that's actually good with the knuckleball? Because you don't want it spinning. I don't know. I saw on the broadcast that it was spinning too much. It was not moving like a knuckleball should be moving. doing better in spring training for him. I don't know if that's a Petco Park thing compared to Peoria, Arizona. But my point, like, it was just not working. It wasn't good enough. And I just don't understand why there wasn't the adaption there. At least I don't think that they adapted enough in that outing. So we'll see what happens next time out for Matt Waldron. And then offensively, you know, Bogaerts 0 for 3 in game one of this series. Cronenworth went 0 for. Manny, when he gets hits, it just doesn't feel like they have been in those key spots. Now, I don't have like the numbers in front of me. How many times has he been up? You know, seventh inning later in a tight game. There hasn't been a ton of tight games for the Padres so far in their 9 games this year, to be honest. I mean, there's been blowouts. And yeah, Waldron just didn't put the Padres in a great, and Brito as well gave up 2 runs. Didn't put the Padres in a great spot there to really feel like, okay, we're in a great spot to go win this ball game. You know, Jackson Merrill, that was an amazing moment. Him homering to the opposite field there in the third inning. Made it 4-1 at the time. I love watching that guy hit. I love watching that guy play baseball. Just period. You know, the Padres sure seems like they found a good one. So props to AJ Preller and the scouting staff, obviously, getting him out of the draft years ago. I hope that he continues playing well. Because usually Padres players, they don't come up and immediately play really well. Homegrown Padres players, right? C.J. Abrams came up and there was moments, but it was a little underwhelming there before he got traded in that Soto deal. Tatis, that was an exception, but remember there was that hamstring injury that he suffered in Washington on that day game when he was stretching for a throw. Maybe, was it from Hosmer or was it from, I want to say it was from Lauer. He was good, but then there was injuries, right? I'm trying to think of other. Renfroe, Margot, Hedges, like Aswai, you can count to all those guys. These guys weren't on the level of Jackson Merrill, I don't think, when they were, you know, debuting and the hype that they got. But those guys obviously ended up being disappointing before they ended up not being with the Padres anymore. So it's refreshing. I guess that's – and Campusano, maybe I should mention him, but – he didn't get consistent playing time. He was blocked by Austin Nola, Caratini, I think a little bit. He just didn't get enough playing time there. But it's refreshing to see Jackson Merrill come up, get playing time. I was wanting him to start today. When you have a day off tomorrow, like, let him face a lefty. It's Zach Thompson. You know, this isn't Madison Bumgarner in his prime that we're talking about here. I was hoping that he was going to be in this lineup, but I like what I'm seeing out of Jackson. It's refreshing. I'd like to see Paulie get some more at-bats, but if Tyler Wade continues to play well, I'm not going to sit here and be like, what is Mike Schilt doing? Grand Paulie needs to be playing every single day. I'm on that more with Merrill, obviously, than Paulie. It would be one thing if Wade was sucking it up, but he's actually getting on base at a good clip. He's actually playing pretty well right now. I don't think it's going to be sustainable. Just looking at, you know, the track record of Tyler Wade. But for now, yeah, I'd like Paulie to not just ride the bench, but I'm okay with Wade playing. Maybe the Padres should just go Paulie and Wade only and not go with Eggy. But then you're taking out the right-handed bat, but it would give you the right-handed bat off the bench late in the game if that's what you want. So, you know, there's some options there for Mike Schilt, obviously. So, Padres, they lose game one of this series. Just to recap here, 6-2. They lose game two, 5-2. They win game three here today, 3-2. Disappointing, like I said earlier, a disappointing series. I think overall a disappointing homestand. What'd they go overall? So they split the two. So they went 500, right? No, one game under. Because they split the Dodger games. 3-4 on the homestand. I mean, I know it's early in the season, right? It's game 9, but I don't think a lot of Padres fans are going to be sitting here like, no, I'll take a 3-4 homestand. You're not playing the Dodgers in the homestand. You're playing a Cardinals team that you didn't have to face Sonny Gray. You didn't have to face Lance Lynn. Edmund was hurt. Who else was hurt on that team? I believe Dylan Carlson was out, right? He was out. I'm forgetting someone. Lars Nootbaar was out. You didn't have to face Blake Snell with the Giants. You won the Logan Webb game. So, yeah, I just think overall it was disappointing. All right, quick break, and then I'll remind you about some of the other great partners of the show. And then before getting to the chat, I'm going to get to a couple more topics. Check out Gaglione Bros' famous cheesesteaks and garlic fries on Friars Road. You can visit their website, gaglionebros.com, for their entire menu and enjoy their cheesesteaks and fries at Petco Park and Snapdragon Stadium as well. All right, some of the great partners of the show, other than Gaglione Bros, obviously they are great. Breaking Tea, Padres, Aztecs, and Wave shirts and sweatshirts. Click the link in the description for them. San Diego Wave is off. There's the international break. U.S. Women's National Team plays this weekend against Japan on Saturday in She Believes Cup, their first game there. Jaden Shaw, Alex Morgan, Abby Dahlkemper, Naomi Girma, obviously. They are a part of that. And then there's Kaylin Sheridan, obviously, with Canada. So if you're looking for Wave players, how can you watch them? Well, you can watch them on their international break there, playing internationally. Underdog Fantasy, 100% deposit match up to $100. Use code TALKINGFRIARS. Click that link in the description. Great stuff there. My partnership with Underdog just renewed for a year, so that's great. Love working with them. I do my Underdog Fantasy picks every day during my pregame thoughts. I feel like I've actually been doing pretty good this year, nailing those. So you can use my advice. You can say, no, Ben's an idiot, and I'm going to go with another guy. Totally up to you. But there's been some good – there's a lot more options with Underdog this year with pick'ems, higher lowers, not just general strikeouts, but strikeouts in the first inning, hits. For a player, you know, first, I think three innings is an option, like little things like that. So check them out. SeatGeek, code TALKINGFRIARS, $20 off your first order with them using SeatGeek. First time, you know, log in with an email, first time getting Padre tickets, use the code and boom, you'll get that discount. All right. I wanted to get to a couple of articles that were out. Let's start off with Juan Soto. Britt Jaroli put out this piece in The Athletic, and it was about Juan Soto's time after he was traded from the Washington Nationals. He was talking about how the Nationals were family to him, and it's never going to be like that again. And there were some quotes in there about Juan Soto with the Padres. Why is Juan wearing headphones? Some of the Padres coaches were at their wits' end. This was during, like, the hitters' meetings. So maybe some would take that as Juan's not paying attention, but he didn't want to hear about the opposing pitchers' tells or signs they might be tipping pitches. Juan's just a hitter. He wants to react. So it didn't seem like it was that big of a deal. At least when I read this article here, it was described as a small oddity, but the situation reflected the Padres' broader issues, which range from the clubhouse to the top of the front office. No one could agree on how to reach their newest star. Some in the organization thought Soto should be left alone. Others thought they should be in more contact with Soto, checking in with him daily, assessing his moods, blah, 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 blah. Soto said, according to numerous sources within the team, there's no money for me here. And he was referring, obviously, to Manny being locked up, Tatis being locked up, Bogaerts being locked up. And yeah, is he lying there? I mean, no. And it's not like he told that to the media publicly. But I think maybe that's like sort of his mindset. Like, yeah, there's no money for me here. So, I mean, how – I don't want to question his commitment. But he also did say last year he was the one that admitted to them quitting during games when they get down. Like, he had to quit. Was part of the quote in Seattle. So there's that. I'm not like pissed off at Juan Soto. He got traded. In this article, he was saying how the Padres were telling him no, 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 no. And then out of nowhere, they traded him. I don't really know if I believe that. And even if the Padres said, no, Preller just said, we're going to be looking at our best options. We're going to do what's best for the team for short term and long term. And so Soto took that as, no, I'm not going to be traded because, of course, I'm best for the team. He didn't read on social media. He didn't read any reports, hear about anything. I mean, Soto was being talked about being traded to the Yankees for a while in the offseason. That was the big talking point around the Padres, was what was going to happen with Juan Soto. I think us Padres fans knew that Soto was going to get dealt. If the Padres wanted to create more room, more financial flexibility, Soto was going to get dealt. So I'm not really with him there about him being traded out of nowhere. What was interesting was him saying here about turning down the $440 million from the Nats. Padres never made an extension offer, which I'm not surprised by because of the contracts already locked up, obviously. He says here, you cannot be selfish. You have to think about the guys who come in behind you. That's what Judge did. In opting to test free agency, he made a great deal. Corey Seager, Otani, all these guys are setting the market for the guys after them. And if I were to take anything down there with what the Nats offered, it would make it different, tougher for guys coming up. Okay. Do I believe that Juan Soto really cares about the guys coming up and, oh, I need to not take $440 million from the Nats so that other guys coming up can get more money than me? Does he really care about that, or does he just care about getting the most money possible and he was willing to bet on himself and not take 440, see where the market was going, and I'm a free agent in a few years. Maybe I'll be able to get over $500 million because these contracts continue to increase with these guys on long-term deals. So by the time I'm a free agent, look how much money I'm going to get. So yeah, I'll decline that. So the whole setting the market thing, that's probably Boris telling him to say that. I have a hard time believing those players are like, no, I really care about setting the market so that other guys can do better for me in the future. Like, it's $440 million, you know? I think he's trying to get the most money possible. I don't think he has, like, something against the Padres. I mean, maybe because they signed Bogarts instead of offering him an extension. But if we think, we know that he wasn't going to take $440 million from the Padres because he rejected that from the Nationals, what would he have even accepted? If the Padres offered him $500 million, would he have accepted that? Or would he have said, well, you offered me $500, so I know you're going to at least give that in free agency, so now I'm going to use that against you, and I can maybe go get more money from you, or I can get more money from another team because I know that you're offering me $500 million. So, like, I just don't know. He was not the reason why I don't think the Padres missed the playoffs last year. His OPS was over 900. He was still, I think, top 10 in MVP voting. A San Diego source said in this article, he's been fully Borisized. So, like, Boris is really getting into him, influence on him about what to say to the media and his mindset and all that, which, yeah. I mean, I kind of buy that. Not surprised by that. I'll say this. I'll end this with this. With Soto, I never thought, well, actually, that would be a lie. At the beginning of his tenure, before Bogart signed here, I was like, they're going to extend Juan Soto. Peter Seidler's going to get this done. I think that's what my mindset was. But when Bogart's happened, that's when things change. Like, Soto's not staying. I think he sees it. I think everyone sees it. And I'm not surprised when that came out that they never even offered him an extension, like an actual extension on paper, because they couldn't afford that. You know, Peter Seidler, at least according to Scott Boras, kept telling Boras that we're going to find a way to keep Juan Soto. Like, Juan Soto is a Padre. Juan Soto is going to be on my team, is essentially what Peter Seidler was telling Scott Boras. But I think we all knew that that just wasn't going to happen. Peter can be as optimistic as he wanted to, but unless they found a way to trade Xander's contract, it wasn't going to happen. I think the Padres, Peter Seidler wanted Xander. He didn't know how much longer he was going to be living. He wanted to add a star, another guy that Padres fans could go buy their jersey, because Padres fans know that that guy is going to be here long term. And Peter loved that about bringing guys in on long-term deals. Like, these guys are not, this isn't the Oakland A's where you can't go get a jersey because you don't know, like, that guy's not going to be here in a year. No, these guys are going to be here for the rest of their careers. They're Padres, and I respect that about Peter. Was that the best decision to spend $280 million on Xander Bogaerts? No. But I think he wanted to go all out for 2023, coming off of making the NLCS in 2022. You get Tatis back. You have all that talent, Hader, Snell, all those guys. You bring in another star with Bogaerts. You have Manny coming off of what should have been an MVP season. Bogaerts, you have Soto for the last year under, or two more years, but you have him under control. Go all out. And to go all out, they gave Xander that long-term contract to bring another star in. I do respect Peter Seidler going all out. Now, again, like Bogaerts, I like Xander's mentality. It seems like he's a team player that wants to win, and he's a baseball rat. I love that. You know, I can relate to him, obviously. Like, I loved it right from the get-go. The whole baseball struck thing at the press conference, loved it. But I can agree, like, it wasn't the smartest thing to give the guy $280 million. Once that happened, it just wasn't going to happen. So they went all out. They said, we can't control what Juan Soto is going to do. You know, when he is a free agent, they sensed that we're not going to be able to sign him to an extension. Maybe even, like, regardless of what we offer him, we're not signing him to an extension. So how about let's control what we can control? We can have Soto and we can have Bogaerts. Well, Bogaerts long-term, hopefully that can work out okay. And we can go all out for 2023. We don't know how long we're going to have Soto. Let's just go for it. And I think that's what happened. And they swung, they missed. But hey, in order to hit a home run, you have to swing the bat. And so I can at least respect that from the Padres, you know, point of view, Peter Seidler's point of view. I'd rather have an owner swing and miss than be John Fisher over there with the A's and not swing the bat, you know, not take the bat off your shoulders, right? Okay. The other article I want to get to was the one that came out from Ken Rosenthal and Dennis Lynn in The Athletic. And it talked about, oh, my screen went black. Am I still here? Hopefully I'm still here. Let me know in the chat. Please just give me like thumbs up in the chat or just say I'm good, that I'm still here. Because my screen on my side went black. So I'm just waiting for someone to say I'm good. Okay, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you, Master Riven. All right. So this article came out from The Athletic, Dennis Lynn and Ken Rosenthal. And it talks about the Padres showing interest in Luis Arraez. The Padres showed interest in Arraez throughout the offseason and made a strong offer for him during spring training, according to sources briefed on the Marlins discussions. A Padres source, however, said the team was more focused on Luzardo, who represented an alternative in trade conversations to right-hander Dylan Cease, the pitcher San Diego acquired from the White Sox on March 13th. Arraez is a two-time batting champion, but how he might have fit with the Padres, a team that cut its opening day payroll by more than $80 million from 23 to 24, is an open question. So let's stop right there. The whole Luzardo thing, like, that's not happening anymore. Like, they acquired Dylan Cease. That's like, it was an alternative as written here. Now Arraez, the Marlins are off to a terrible start. So I could definitely see Luis Arraez traded somewhere. To the Padres, I'm not so sure. It's another guy that doesn't hit a ton of home runs. Sure, like, that's the, you want to look up a Tony Gwynn in baseball nowadays, like, Luis Arraez is probably someone that baseball fans are immediately going to point to. But yeah, the fit. I mean, are the Padres going to trade Ha-Sung Kim? And with the adjustment Bogaerts has had to make to second base, they're going to just put Bogaerts back at short, and they're going to move Cronenworth, who's worked his butt off to be the best first baseman he can. They're going to put him at second base to put Arise at first. Or are they going to keep everyone like this, not give the Marlins any big league pieces other than like a Eggy Rosario maybe? I think the Marlins would want some, but all the infielders are up on long-term contracts. They're not going to trade Arise and acquire Kim for 1 year when they're not going to go be a postseason team. So I'm just trying to figure out, how does this guy even fit, right? And that's what's put in this article. $10.6 million salary for Luis Arise, DH, but Manny's DHing. So when Manny goes to third, is that when they pull the trigger on Arise? I don't know if the Marlins would do it this early in the year, but I think them, those guys in the front office, I think they realize, okay, we know we're not a World Series team. If the Padres can offer the best package, let's give Luis Arise to the Padres. But let's say, so if it would be to DH, the Padres, they have $14 million a room, according to Fangraphs, to the luxury tax threshold. So if they acquire Arise, then that's taking up almost all of the flexibility. So what additions would they be able to even make at the deadline? What if there's injuries pitching-wise and they need pitching reinforcements? You know, it's one thing if he was a lefty power bat. But if Cronenworth's going to have a good year, and so far he's impressing, he's not a long-term deal. He's not going to get traded. Do the Padres, will they feel that need to go get Luis Arise if they have Bogaerts? Let's say, hopefully he can play better. He's at second. Even if he doesn't, he's not going anywhere. Kim, hopefully he can, you know, start turning things around. They have Manny at third. Cronenworth is having a good year. Do they feel like they're going to have the need? They could sign Tommy Pham and he could DH some games. What if they give Graham Pauly at-bats and he ends up performing well and he can DH? And it gives them that flexibility before the deadline to go make an addition, to make a couple big additions. Maybe not big, but I think the big addition was Dylan Cease, right? But make a couple of additions to round out a roster to go make that postseason push. So I just wonder the fit. I think out of those guys in the infield, who's most likely to be dealt, it would be Ha-Sung Kim. But to the Marlins, I just question that fit. It wouldn't be to the Marlins. It would have to be a three-team trade, I would think, right? Or you trade him to another team for something, for pitching maybe. You acquire Arise and you give up, you know, prospect to the Marlins, because what big league piece for 1 year? Like, they're not going to want a rental. The Marlins, that doesn't make sense for them to get a rental piece. So right now, I don't really see the great fit, to be honest. Luis Arise with the Padres. And in this article, it was written as more of a, hey, the Padres tried in spring training. And I think that those discussions would maybe happen again before the deadline. I'm not so sure what happening right now on April 3rd. But Preller's always on the phone, so you can never count it out, I guess. But yeah, here, Lennon Rosenthal says here, the Padres announced early in camp move of Xander to second base to clear shortstop for Ha-Sung Kim. The only way to create a spot for Arise and accommodate his $10.6 million salary might have been to trade, and key there, might have been, so like before the year, might have been to trade Kim and return Bogaerts to short, or trade Jake Cronenworth and play Arise at first. The Padres are 14 mil away from the luxury tax, and they want to retain flexibility in case they need to address multiple needs before the trade deadline. Arise's contact skills certainly would have been welcome in a San Diego lineup that lacks established left-handed hitters. Well, yeah, of course. So they go into that. Yeah, I mean, Arise, do you want him in your lineup? Yeah. Makes contact. Like a good hitter. I think he would be a good situational guy if you need a hit. You know, you want someone to get on base. That'd be a pretty good leadoff hitter, I think. Yeah, cool. But is it the fit for the Padres right now? I don't know if it's a fit on April 3rd. Salary-wise, financial flexibility-wise. Cronenworth, if he keeps playing well, like if they acquire Rice, it would be for him to play first. I don't know if they'd acquire him and pay him $10 million to go DH. they could have done that with like JD Martinez, right? A little more than 10, I think, is what he signed with the Mets. Some of it's deferred, I believe. But you get my point. I know Arise is a lefty, but Arise is another guy that it's not like he's this power bat. So give me your thoughts. Arise to the Padres. It's not happening now. This was written more as I feel like Odenis and Ken discovered that these talks happened before the season, and then they wrote about it. I'd be very surprised if something happened like soon with this. Maybe before the deadline, you know, it would be prorated, so it would be less money the Padres would have to spend on Arise as well. Less maybe that they'd have to give up for Arise. Marlins season, though, off to the worst start that it could be. So I wouldn't be surprised if Arise gets dealt. I just don't know if it's going to be to the Padres. Arise is legit. Yes, Arise is a legit hitter. Cool to be in the lineup. Yeah, you'd like that. But I just wonder the trade fit there. And then positionally, that's all. All right, let's get to the chat. I'm going up to the top here. So we'll probably be talking about more. There's probably going to be some comments about this series, and then we'll get more into all of the other comments. If you want to join the show, again, reminder, click that link that's pinned up at the top of the chat. Did I miss anything social media wise? I don't think so. As for the Aztecs, Malachi Flynn, former Aztec, he dropped like 50 points tonight. So pretty cool for him. All right. JD's third asks, is this a playoff team? How many games will we win this season? 79, 80, not even? I think it's too early to say that they're not going to win less, or they're not going to win 80 games. I think that they can win like 85 games, 80, 85, 86 games. I think that they're a wild card team. Irie says Tuesday games sucked. I hate when I go to a loss. Yeah, I was there too, and that wasn't fun. It was fun, you know, watching Darvish pitch. It was good, and then he gave up that home run. It was like, oh, are you kidding me? And the offense just wasn't enough. G-Money88 says, what's up? Thanks for the stream. Boys looking a lot like last year, but it's still very early. Upcoming schedule is tough. Well, very early is literally what Mike Schilt said in a presser, I think after yesterday's game. Padres fans don't want to hear that. But, I mean, the facts are the facts. Like, it is very early in the season. What percentage of the way are we through this season? 9 out of 162 is less than 6% of the way through the season is what we're at. So whether you don't want to hear it, I mean, you might not want to hear it, but it is very early. Every game counts, though. Yeah, that's fair. Wait until the All-Star break to truly see where this team is in 2024. But, I mean, I'm a Padres fan that talks about this team almost every day, so I can't just sit here and say, well, let's just wait, let's wait, let's wait. I'm going to give my fan reaction to the games. Yeah, Princess sounds about right. Yeah, I mean, am I lying? That's what it was last year. Has Hader been struggling with the Astros? Interesting. Don't feel bad for him. He got a ton of money, right? That was his objective with the Padres. Stay healthy so I can get a ton of money. What's he at right now? Oh, 6.75 ERA in four outings. Four innings of work. Giving up a home run. He's walked a couple guys. Seven punch outs. Isn't it like almost the entire Astros bullpen that's struggling? I mean, they got swept by the Yankees 4-0. Holy cow. Foot says, Xander has got to barrel some balls up. He hasn't gotten any good contact with his bat so far. I'm trying to remember if that's true. He doesn't have a home run yet. I mean, the home opener, right? Like, I don't need him to have hard contact every time. I'm not saying that he needs to do that, because some situations, right, a pitch, maybe it's down and away, whatever that pitch was home opener, and he doesn't hit it hard, but it, you know, drops in, right? Like situational baseball, you don't need to hit it hard all the time, but you need to be hitting it hard more often than not. When you're Xander Bogaerts and you have a $280 million contract. Master Evan says, shouldn't the players be urgent? I mean, what message do you think they are sending this early in the season? I think the players are urgent. I mean, I was watching the broadcast earlier today, like early in the game, and the graphic came up that the Padres were one of the best teams this year so far with runners in scoring position. They're hitting almost 400. That was going into pretty much today's game. It was like, it was high 300s, almost 400. So I'm like, well, I feel like I'm being a little harsh on them with runners in scoring position. But it just feels like, okay, runners in scoring position in a key spot. Seventh inning later, what is the numbers there in comparison to just runners in scoring position in general? I feel like the at-bats, for the most part, are fine. There's some where it's like, yeah, maybe work the guy a little bit more. But I'm fine overall so far with, like, the approach. It's just some guys, you want them to be producing more than they are when they're making as much money as they are. I was at the game yesterday, and a guy behind me he continued to complain about Manny, how these rookies are hitting better than you are. Like, I think he was looking at the Jumbotron, looking at the averages that they put up there. And average is not everything. But I think he's not the only Padre fan that's like, come on, Manny. I mean, you've got Jackson Merrill up here performing like this, and look how much money he's making compared to you, and look at what you're doing. So there's going to be some fans that are going to do that, and then there's going to be some other fans that are like, we're at game 9 of the year, game 8 yesterday. Manny Machado is Manny Machado for a reason. Like, he has that contract for a reason. He will come around. But that's also, you know, what we got into trouble with. That's what the players got into trouble with last year as well, saying, oh, it'll come around. We've got the talent. And it didn't come around until September when they were playing the Rockies and the A's. And they finally won 4 games in a row. I wonder when the first 4-game winning streak is going to be for this Padres team. Is it going to be this weekend? Is it going to be in May? I wonder when it's going to be. Yeah, I agree, Angel. I was glad as well that Joe stepped up today. I knew he was going to come around at some point. You know, fans are reactionary. I'm reactionary sometimes as well, obviously. So they were worried. You say here you were scared. I think if you're a little bit, I think I'm more of a measured fan than some. So I think I have an easier ability to, like, remember who Joe Musgrove is and just, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt here. Like, yeah, he's going to turn it around. He cares a lot about the Padres and doing well, you know. Now, it's one start, so I'm not saying, like, he has totally turned it around. He could go crap the bed the next outing. But it was really encouraging what I saw today from Joe, for sure. JD's third says Mike Shildt. Well, he didn't say Shildt. He said something else. But Mike Shildt just gives out compliments and trophies even when we lose. No fire or passion. Dull. Dry. He has passion. I assure you of that. I do understand fans getting annoyed, though, when they lose and he gives compliments left and right about players. I know it feels like so far in these post-game media conferences, pressers, he's going, like, over the top with being positive. I wonder if he's going to keep doing that if it's May and the Padres are 3 games under 500. What's going to happen then, you know? Now, I'm not going to be super pissed off about it, but yeah, it is a little bit frustrating when you're watching that and they just lost a game that they maybe could have won. And he's like, man, let's give props to this guy. Let's shout out this guy. He's been really good for us. I mean, like, we don't want to hear that after a loss. Steve says, did I miss trade talk? No, you should have been able to hit this comment was at 9:01. So yes, it's 9:30 now. So I believe you did not miss that. And we could talk about that more, obviously. Yeah, Pirates are in first. Yeah, sorry. When I said the Pirates were not the Pirates, that's not what I meant. Yeah, that's why I changed. I believe I changed the team there. I didn't say not the Pirates, but how about like the White Sox or the Marlins, you know, some crappy teams. Rockies, man. Rockies, White Sox, those years for those fan bases, holy cow, those are going to be some long seasons. I feel bad for Steven Wilson. You're about to go on a trip to Korea. You're sitting there with your, I think with maybe his girlfriend and Joe Musgrove and his girlfriend, sitting there, you're ready to go, and then you're going to, and you get dealt to the White Sox, the White Sox of all teams. And now you have to be in that dumpster fire of a team all year. Maybe you get dealt, but holy cow. I was thinking the other night at Petco, like, did the White Sox really have to take Steven Wilson from us? Did they really have to do that? What, they needed that arm? I know that they're doing that to go flip him at some point, but man, I'd like to have Steven Wilson in the bullpen. Going through the chat here, Mike says Jake is excellent defensively at first. He just doesn't have the bat that a first baseman usually brings. Yeah. And for anyone that expects him to be Matt Olson or Freddie Freeman with the bat, I don't know what to tell you. Just look at the different body compositions between how tall is Freddie, how tall is Matt, how tall is Cronenworth. You know, like, just look at the differences there. Cronenworth, he's been good. I like it, him being the three hitter right now. I'm fine with that. You know, just stick with his approach, not try to do too much like we know he did last year. I mean, he was admitting to it after signing that contract almost on opening day, a little bit after opening day last year. I remember that. I went live after that. It was Friday night, right? Friday night, he signed that deal. I was pumped up because I'm a big Cronenworth fan, but I admit I wasn't like really thinking about, man, did they really have to do this 7-year contract? Now, we hadn't gone through the entire 2023 season with Jake yet and what was going to happen. But man, did they really have to do 7 years for a guy that they could have just had for his prime and then just been done with? I wasn't really thinking about that. I was just excited that they got Cronenworth locked down. But yeah, I think he's good defensively and he's only going to get better defensively. And if he can stick with this approach offensively, I don't think he'll be an all-star because Matt Olson, Freddie Freeman, Goldschmidt, like they're going to get the love, I would imagine. But he will be deserving of an all-star appearance, probably, if there's like an injury to, we'll see what Pete Alonso does with the Mets. But if there's, you know, Matt Olson, Freddie Freeman, if someone, you know, gets hurt. Maybe I'm being biased and I'm just not thinking of other first basemen right now other than those two. Actually, yeah, Bryce Harper. One of them could DH, though. I don't think Cronenworth's going to be an all-star, but I think Padres fans, we will. If Cronenworth keeps it up like this, we will be talking about Cronenworth as like, man, this guy has had a really good year. He might not be an NL all-star, but he deserves to be an honorable mention for the all-star team. Comeback player of the year. I know there's Edwin Diaz, there's Rhys Hoskins, but comeback player of the year, Padres comeback player of the year, Jake Cronenworth, I could definitely see that happen. Getting into, I believe, the trade talk here. How many years of control for a rise? Is it one? One or two, I think. Luis Arise contract. Do, 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 do. 2 years. 10.6 mil this year, and then his last year of arbitration next year. So, you know, if it's, since it's multiple years, the Padres would have to give up more than just, you know, a couple prospects, I would think. Mike says, San Diego, San Francisco, and Arizona are just going to beat up on each other all season. I mean, I think that argument is more valid a few years ago when they were playing 19 games against one another, but they're not playing as many games against one another. And even if they do, do we think that the Cubs are ready to be a postseason team? Are the Brewers a postseason team? Are the Marlins? No. Like, I think two teams. Out of the East, Braves and Phillies, Dodgers, Cardinals, let's say they win the Central, and then that leaves room for two more, Padres-Giants, or D-backs-Giants, or D-backs-Padres. So it's going to be a fight for sure. I do wonder about Arizona and San Francisco, like their depth. Can Arizona do it again? And San Francisco, which Blake Snell are they going to get? Is Jung-Hoo Lee going to perform like he did against the Padres all year long? I still see some question marks there with the Giants. Obviously, yes, there's question marks here with the Padres. I understand that. I think the Padres can get in, though. Yeah, beating up on Colorado, that will definitely help because you got to assume the Dodgers will and the D-backs and the Giants, you would think that they're going to. The Rockies just suck. So you got to win, at minimum, win those series. You can't be losing those series to the Rockies. Good question by PJ. When is the cutoff for it is still early? That's a good question. Is that like after the first month of the season? That's when we can't say anymore, it's still early. Is that the cutoff right there? Or is it first 2 months, like a third of the way into the season? Is it after they get home from their first United States road trip? Is it once the Dodgers series happens? All right, that's it. I wonder. For me, I feel like it would be, now I'm trying to avoid saying it's still early, you know, right now. I want to have urgency here, but it is still a fact, whether you like it or not. It is a fact that we've played less than 6% of the year. It is still early. For me, I think the cutoff would be like a month into the season. Because, that's like 1/6 of the year. After that, is it still early? You know, if you divide your day like into six parts, right? Let's say you wake up at 6 a.m., you go to bed at 10 p.m. What's early there? Like, if you're putting that into the Padres season, if this makes sense. It probably doesn't. It's probably a stupid comparison. But, from 6 to 10, is that early? And then after 10, it's not early anymore in your day? Like, what's the cutoff there? All right, continuing to go through the chat here. Hardy says, I hate the Dodgers. Amen. I agree with that. Denelson Lamet got a save for the Dodgers. All right. So the Giants got swept by the Dodgers, huh? Yeah, it's interesting. I see some Padres fans like, yeah, thank you, Dodgers, because I think we all realize they're going to win the division. So let's just, you know, hope the Dodgers win that because we're going to be competing with the Giants for a playoff spot. So Dodgers, beat the Giants as many times as you can. Hopefully that can help us a little bit. I think that's how Padres fans are going about this when the Dodgers play the Giants. It's always just for me, it's like, can't they just split series when it's a four-game series? If I have to say one team, I mean, I don't want to say the Dodgers, but I care about the Padres making the postseason, so I probably would go that Dodger route because that's less wins for the Giants. I just don't – I'm not a big fan of watching those games because I just don't like both teams. It's one thing if it was like September, but I'm sorry. I can't get pumped up for my two rival Dodger Giants in April. All right, that's going to do it. Talking Friars episode 581. Thank you, everybody, so much for the time. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. Hopefully you enjoyed being a part of the live chat. If you were a part of it, if you're watching on replay, I appreciate you listening on podcast platforms. I appreciate you. Have a great rest of your night, great rest of your day. If you're listening to this on Thursday, the day off, I'll see y'all later. I will be back later. I'm trying to remember. Later in the week, expect an interview to come out later this week.